This is Growing the Valley, a podcast by the University of California, Agriculture and Natural Resources. I'm one of your hosts, Luke Milliron, Farm Advisor for Butte, Tehama, and Glenn Counties.
I'm your other host, Phoebe Gordon, Orchard Farm Advisor for Madera and Merced Counties.
I talked spray application this past January with Lynn Wunderlich, a UC Cooperative Extension Farm Advisor who covers four counties in the beautiful Central Sierra foothills. Lynn Wunderlich has a research and extension program focused on vineyards in the region as well as in foothill orchards. Wunderlich has an expertise in air blast spray application and had just given a talk on the subject with Farm Advisor Franz Niederholzer at the Big Room of Sierra Nevada Brewing Company in Chico. Please forgive the sound of an active brewing facility in the background of our interview. None of the following discussion of spray application constitutes a recommendation. We've linked to additional spray application resources in the show notes. Lynn Wunderlich starts the conversation discussing how she initially became interested in spray application.
Working in agriculture all my adult career life, either as a farm advisor or working for a PCA or working for USDA and all the different things I've done in my career, I've noticed that spray application was so important to efficacy and that not enough people were talking about it. So I just, from there, continued to try and work on it.
You had a great line in the talk you just gave at the meeting we're at, describing how spray application is just a completely sometimes forgotten part of integrated pest management. It's just it's a critical component. So where do you see spray technology fitting in with IPM?
We know that pesticides are a part of IPM, right? I mean, they're usually thought of as the last resort after biological control, cultural control, mechanical control. But still, I don't think there's any cropping system that has been able to completely eliminate pesticides from their successful IPM program. And we also know that pesticides are part of organic programs. Even more so with softer pesticides, we need to concern ourselves with getting the best coverage we can. So I think of spray application technology as part of IPM related to pesticide efficacy. And it's related to both, good spray coverage. It's needed for more and more today for our softer materials, for our organic materials. We need to concern ourselves with the best coverage we can. And that all has to do with how we apply those materials. It also, a good friend of mine, Franz Niederholzer, I think you might know him, colleague, farm advisor, he's made the comment, the nozzle is the spearhead of IPM. And I love that quote from Franz because as IPM practitioners, we spend a lot of time thinking about the biology of the pest, thinking about, monitoring, our pesticide companies spend billions of dollars on R&D to bring new products. We talk a lot about resistance management, how to steward these products so that we can continue to use them. We talk about all these different aspects. But we don't talk enough about spray application, about the sprayer and how the sprayer works and how to best dial in our sprayers. So it's a bit like thinking about, tracking your prey, hunting your prey, understanding the biology of your prey and where it's going to be and when it's going to be there and monitoring it, and then going out and blindly throwing the spear without sharpening it, without looking where we're throwing it. It's quite frustrating sometimes working in this field and then trying to get us to spend a little more time on our sprayers.
Any spray application talk is going to either start or have at its foundation formula for calibration. How do you describe this to folks and get the practice of calibration across and make it friendly to the folks you talk with?
The fundamental relationship or the basic formula for spraying is application rate, that's our spray volume, in gallons per acre equals flow rate in gallons per minute, that's coming from our nozzles, over land rate in acres per minute. Too often when we talk about calibration, you know, everything we're trying to remember all those conversion factors, you know, how many feet in a mile and how many, you know, ounces in a gallon and, you know, all those different conversion factors of having to do with the units. And so I like to try and simplify it so that we can just think about it logically. And I love that fundamental relationship, flow rate over land rate. Now, everybody usually knows what flow rate means. We're talking about our nozzles, how much flow is coming out of the nozzles. A lot of times, you know, we talk this term land rate. That's, we don't use that term. So what is land rate? Well, land rate is simply the speed, the ground speed that we're going, multiplied by the swath width. And what we're doing when we're spraying is we're spraying an area. So everybody usually gets ground speed. That's a component of the calibration formula. Most of the time, we're not thinking about swath width. So ground speed times swath width, area squared, or area over it's a rate, so over some unit of time. So when we use the fundamental relationship, gallons per minute, flow rate over land rate, acres per minute, we calculate, to get to that acres, we calculate our speed in feet per minute, travel time, feet per minute, and then we multiply it by our swath width in feet. I guess one of my messages is, don't worry about the units. You can look those up. Just think about what we're doing when we're spraying. We're putting a flow rate from the nozzles over an area over time. So the flow rate is dependent on two things, the nozzle selection and the pressure used. So any given nozzle is going to have a range of flow rates. The flow rate's going to increase for that nozzle with increasing pressure. The final part of calibration is really how much pesticide in the tank. You've got your spray volume, which is total gallons per acre, and to figure out how much pesticide in the tank, of course, we always refer to our label. Typically, there's a PCA makes a recommendation for a particular rate, and then we know how many gallons our tank holds. Okay, so that's, and then we know from our gallons per acre how many acres are going to come out of that tank. That tank's going to do so many acres. So the final part of calibration is actually how much AI goes in the tank. And that's based on the label, the gallons per acre, and how many gallons in a tank holds and how many acres that tank can do.
Calibration should be done in the off-season, getting ready to go into the season. And there's going to be a lot of changes that are going to take place during the season, particularly in orchards, because the target is changing. The canopy is developing with all the foliage, so ground speed is going to have to change. And one of the issues there being that, as you said, speed is distance over time, and time is money, and so people often get going too fast. So what can be the issue with moving too quickly through the orchard?
One of the components of air blast spraying, okay, spraying trees, spraying vines with an air blast sprayer, is that sprayer has a fan, okay? And that, what's the job of the fan? So the fan has several jobs. One of it is to move the canopy, to perturb the canopy, to open the canopy up to that spray that you're putting up into the canopy. The other job of the fan is to move that spray, drop those spray droplets up into the canopy, so entrain them into that air that you're producing with the fan. And in order for the fan to do that job, you have to give it enough time. So travel speed, moving slow enough so that that fan can do its job, is critically important, and especially when that canopy is fully developed, you know, the height of the season. When we're talking about navel orangeworm control in almonds, when we're talking about mite control, Okay, we want to move those leaves. We want to get that spray to the underside of the leaves. We need to move slow enough to give the fan enough time to do its job. And, you know, in these crops, these tree nut crops, we've got these incredibly big sprayers, you know, where a lot of the money in the sprayer is put into the fan. You know, they're big fans. There might be a dual engine, twin engine fan sprayers with the large fans that produce a lot of volume. Well, if you're moving too fast, then you're not letting your investment do its job. So, but the thing about it is as you've said, that's not true at bloom time. That's not true in the dormant season when there isn't any canopy, right? So then the fan doesn't have to work it as hard. In fact, you could even slow down the fan, as Franz Niederholzl has shown with the gear up, throttle down work that he's done. We can slow the speed of the fan. We can move faster at that time of the year. So you know, the speed is, the ground speed is critically important, setting that ground speed to match the canopy, to match it at the time of the year. And how do we check that? We use water-sensitive paper to check that. We use tying ribbons up into the canopy so we can see if those ribbons move. That means that the air is getting there. If the air gets there, those droplets are going to get there.
The other side of having the canopy developing through the season is that it's going to be harder and harder to reach the tops of the canopies. And Franz had a slide showing problems at, you know, at the tops with whatever pest or disease you might be combating, where, you know, you don't see any pest or disease down low in the canopy where the spray is reaching. And talking about the role of droplet size and maybe lobbing droplets to get something to the top of the canopy.
Yeah. So we now have the ability to produce larger droplets in an air and using an air blast sprayer. And this is with these drift controlling nozzles, these air induction nozzles. They produce larger droplets, relatively larger. I did talk a little bit about how very small all these droplets are. A nozzle will produce a range of droplet sizes, any nozzle. And we talk generally, kind of grossly, about small droplets, fine droplets, and large droplets. But really, any nozzle produces a range of droplet sizes. So we're always talking about a droplet size range coming out of any nozzle. And usually we refer to the volume median diameter, 0.5, as that number as an indication of whether those droplets are generally large or generally small. So we have these air induction nozzles now, these single-piece nozzles that we can use in air blast sprayers, and they're going to produce larger, generally larger droplets. And these larger droplets have more mass, so they're going to fall out of the airstream sooner than the larger droplets, and they're also going to resist drifting, and they're going to resist the streamlines, the air streamlines that move around things like almond nuts. Okay, so they're going to reduce being entrained into those air streamlines, and they're going to resist being entrained into those air streamlines, and instead they're going to be more prone to hitting that target, to smashing right into it as a larger droplet. Something we might not think about, larger droplets having some advantage for us. We know that they have an advantage in that they don't move as much as smaller droplets do. They don't drift as much. But they also are less prone to become entrained in the air stream that move around and can miss the target completely.
Finally, you've calibrated your sprayer. You're ready to head out and spray. What are some of the other conditions that we should be considering when going out to spray?
Well, there's factors that we can't control so much. So the weather, patterns in the weather, and weather really does affect how droplets, whether droplets make it to the target or not. And so I have this thought, I have is it a spray day or not, right? And so I know that too often, once the season starts, everybody's going every day. They don't have time to slow down, whether the weather is cooperating or not. However, I think that if we do spray when weather conditions are unfavorable for spraying, that just means we're making extra work for ourselves because we might end up with a failed application. And it may not have been worth it to spend the money and time to go out there to spray to begin with. So what are these conditions? Well, wind certainly is one of the obvious ones. We actually don't want to spray when it's completely calm. So 0 to 3 miles per hour is not good conditions because we want turbulent mixing of the spray that doesn't land on the target, that does end up in the air. We want it to dissipate as quickly as possible. So we do need some low wind conditions. So generally we think 3 to 7 or 8 miles per hour are pretty ideal conditions for spraying because we have that ambient turbulent wind that's going to take any spray up and disperse it into the atmosphere quickly, get rid of it. There's other conditions that we need to worry about, especially as we're spraying with higher temperatures and lower relative humidities with fine drops. So higher temperatures and lower relative humidities can actually evaporate those very fine spray droplets. Hey, another reason to consider larger spray droplets. They don't evaporate as quickly. So when we get to these conditions, referred to often as delta T, delta T is the combination of ambient temperature and relative humidity. They both affect whether those fine droplets or any droplet really is going to, how quickly they're going to evaporate. We want to make sure that we spray, if possible, when temperatures are a little bit cooler and relative humidity is a little higher. So, you know, in the evening, later in the day, in the morning. The unfortunate thing about those times is those are also the times when we can see inversions happen. And an inversion layer is just the inverse of natural conditions. So I always think of natural conditions as cool air being higher and warm air being lower. So I think of a mountain. There's snow at the top of the mountain. That's where the cool air should be. It should be up high. It's warmer down below. But inversions happen when an inversion is happening, that situation's reversed. So there's cool air closer to the ground and warm air above it. And those conditions, when those conditions occur and we spray in those conditions, that spray goes up into that warm air and then can move laterally off-site. So it doesn't disperse. So we don't have that turbulent air that favors dispersion, and we can really have some serious consequences of off-site movement. Some keys to help applicators know when those conditions, inversion conditions, are happening are typically that's very still conditions. It will be a cloudless sky. It will often happen early in the morning. And you can light a smoke bomb to test whether if that smoke goes straight up and disperses, that's good. You don't have an inversion condition happening. But if that smoke moves laterally, you've got an inversion and you should not be spraying.
Lynn, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks, Luke, for having me.
Thanks for listening to Growing the Valley, a UCANR podcast. You can find out more about this episode at our website, growingthevalleypodcast.com.
We would like to thank the Almond Board of California and the California Pistachio Research Board for providing funding. We would also like to thank my sister, Muriel Gordon, for writing and recording our theme music.